Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network, LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you too can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.
Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Justin Case.
And as things are still pretty quiet on the US political scene, we're bringing you another ATS member interview.
Today we have with us ATS member Expert 11, who's been a registered and regular member, law-abiding citizen, I might add, on AboveTopSecret.com since August of 2004. He lives in New Zealand.
So for him, it's probably fairly early in the morning we're talking to him, and now we can get all the people guessing what time we record the show. So I think the best thing we can do is take him off hold and say, hi, Luke, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Well, welcome to the show. We've got a fun-packed show, and so hopefully we've never had somebody from the other side of the world on the show so far, so it's a first for us. First things, welcome to the show, and then just, I suppose, to help our viewers out, just to sort of, you know, where did this sort of leanings towards politics come from? What sort of fired your initial interest in politics?
Probably just a general interest in an event, just how decisions affect us, really. I've got a family member who also has a keen interest in politics as well. So it kind of rubs off. When she comes over, we always have like keen debates. And it's just very engaging as well. Although it can get a bit mindless.
So you've never thought about taking public office yourself?
I've thought about it, but I'm not even a member of a party, so I don't really see it happening anytime soon.
Just to sort of help our listeners here, sort of just explain the political landscape in New Zealand for us.
Well, New Zealand's political system is based around mixed member proportional, and that was adopted back in about 93. There are two large parties, the Labour Party, which for American listeners is probably akin to the Democrat, and then the National Party, which is probably closest to the Republicans, and then you've got your various small political parties, such as the Greens, the right-wing ACT Party, Progressives, the Maori Party, and they sort of disappear into almost obscurity during the electoral cycle, but become important around election time because since the introduction of MMP, none of the major parties have been able to govern alone.
And how do you think that's affected New Zealand politics? Because, you know, do you see a difference in the policies and the way that they interact with the people before proportional representation? Because presumably the system before proportional representation was very
broken up. The two basically broken up the two-party state is essentially what's happened. I mean, it means generally means that the larger political parties have to bring a couple concessions to the table if they want to govern to make up the numbers. How it's affected people, well, I guess people have an outlet, a better chance of having their voice heard.
Aren't there times when you're watching the TV and you're hearing somebody speak who represents one of these smaller parties and you just say, where did that come from?
I must admit, the Greens do kind of annoy me a bit, but I think that's due more to my political beliefs than anything else, my political beliefs leaning more towards the conservative side. But yeah, and if you just excuse me for running off for a moment, we've had a situation where our foreign minister, Winston Peters, who's actually outside of cabinet, which is a part of the kind of deal that was hacked up after the last election, has come out and said that his party, which is New Zealand First, opposed the free trade agreement of China. So we have this situation where our own foreign minister is sort of opposing aspects of our government's foreign policy.
Okay, now here in the United States, we have had, I guess, what you'd call a spot of bad luck with trade with China. So what is trade with China doing for you folks in New Zealand?
Well, up until this free trade agreement, basically it was essentially almost one-way traffic in favor of China, because in the 1980s we started to import goods made in China as a part of the economic reforms. You know, we lowered tariffs or got rid of them, and it's only just now that we're going to start to get that in return. So pretty much the same as, say, the US or anywhere else, just about everything's practically made in China now.
So what are the New Zealand exports?
Dairy. The New Zealand economy was basically founded on farming and basically still is. It's backbone of our economy is dairy farming and apples. We export a bit of coal, but not a whole lot compared to, say, the Australians. Interestingly, with the America's Cup, we've done a bit of yacht building and stuff. That's generally what we export. I mean, we still import, I think, a whole lot more from China than we export, but that's not unusual this day and age.
And I'd probably just say, I suppose, one of the key things that certainly people in the UK would see New Zealand for is lamb. There's a huge advertising campaign around New Zealand.
Well, we have Cortex. Yeah. We export lamb as well. I mean, I think the sort of numbers of sheep have been dropping in New Zealand over the years as dairy farming's taken hold. But yeah, that's what we are. We're famous known for lamb and the haka overseas.
Yes, the All Blacks. Yes, let's not talk about rugby to an Englishman. That's probably not a good subject for us to get involved with. We'll probably end up hitting each other with big sticks. But one of the things I'm interested in, how do you see New Zealand on the world stage?
Well, we are a small country. I think we're a small country that does our fair share of the load in terms of peacekeeping and diplomacy. Basically how I see it. I mean, in some areas we probably shot ourselves in the foot in terms of our anti-nuclear stance, but that's now more of a domestic issue than anything else now the Cold War's over.
Oh yeah, because New Zealand had a very strong stance, didn't it? Wouldn't allow any military vessel in which had nuclear weapons or...
I think technically they'd be let in if they declared there was no nuclear weapons on board, but US policy said that they weren't going to do that. So yeah, you're essentially correct though.
Yeah, that's sort of interesting. And I suppose one of the things that I was interested in, and I know we sort of asked a couple of members to ask questions, and I know Johnny Utah sort of asked a question, but the essence of it was slightly off in the fact that New Zealand doesn't have combat troops in Iraq, but at some stage you did have some New Zealand troops on the ground in a limited role.
Yeah, I think we had them in a reconstruction role in the south with the British, I think they were, from memory. It's good.
So what was the feeling in New Zealand? Because, you know, you only have to look, you know, Justin and I come from, you know, clearly he comes from the US, I come from the UK. You know, we are, you know, heavily, massively intertwined in what's going on in Iraq. So I was just interested in how the New Zealand people and how the New Zealand government sold the fact of putting in New Zealand troops, even in a sort of rebuilding role.
Well, I think it was generally before the security situation deteriorated, and I think it was just to help people get them back on their feet after the war, I think. That basically was the selling point. I don't think it was an overly popular deployment, but I think we haven't been in Iraq since about 2004 or 2005, so it's not really an issue that's talked about here.
And do you sort of...
It's a New Zealand troop deployment, not Iraq itself in the conflict.
And do you sort of see potentially that's maybe where New Zealand will be more focusing on the world stage, as you quite rightly say, and maybe, you know, providing peacekeeping troops, providing reconstruction troops in that more vein rather than...
That's primarily what we do. I do think that we need to have the capability to do otherwise in case you need it. That is essentially what we provide, yeah. I mean, our role in Afghanistan is basically providing security and reconstruction in the Bahrainium, I don't think I pronounced it correctly, province.
Okay, and presumably the people are sort of fairly comfortable with that role, or is there still a huge amount of...
In Afghanistan, they are, yeah. It's, well, because of the role we're playing, we haven't had any combat deaths, so there's not a whole lot of reason to oppose that, not rationally anyway.
Which is probably no bad... one of the other things you sort of talk about security in general, and I know people will say because of the, you know, typical projections that we see of the world, people assume that New Zealand and Australia are substantially closer to each other. But I mean, you're about 1,500 miles at least between Australia and New Zealand?
Yeah, well, I actually sort of grew up in Australia, actually. I was born in Perth.
Okay.
And I actually moved over here. So... there's an ocean that separates us, but there's a fierce rivalry. It's sort of something a bit like the US and Canada or the UK and France. Culturally, there are some similarities. If, say, a New Zealander moved to Australia, they'd probably have an easier time adapting to the culture than, say, if they moved to the UK, even though we both sort of have our roots in a sort of British Empire.
And I have a question that relates to British Empire stuff. As I understand it, the Queen of England still plays a role in New Zealand politics. What specifically is that role?
Basically, it's a papal role. She has formally the head of state, but that's it. She has no real role apart from when our Prime Minister goes to England, Helen Clark will probably meet with the Queen. That's about it, really.
If the Queen of England is your head of state, I'm just curious to know what kind of paycheck comes with that, because it doesn't sound like it has long
hours. The UK, I think it's the UK taxpayer that funds the Queen. We don't.
Yep. No, I'd have to jump in on that one, Justin. Yes, being head of state.
If I'm following the question correctly.
Yeah, no, basically the UK pays for the Queen's costs in being head of state. I don't think we do a sort of, you know, cross charge to New Zealand for that. So even the same in Canada, where the Queen is head of state in Canada, you know, we just foot the bill for that one. But ultimately the monarchs, maybe not directly but through officials, probably still has a fair degree of influence in what goes on, maybe from a very political view within New Zealand.
Well, she probably would have, this is just my impression, I'd say if she had sort of influence over anyone, it'd probably be more towards the conservative right, because the left tends to probably favour republicanism slightly more, but that isn't a priority or burning issue at the moment, but that would be my take on it.
And yeah, because interestingly, if I were to sort of put a few pounds down on potentially which one of New Zealand or Australia may well move to become a republic and take away the Queen as head of state, I'd probably put Australia top of the list. And potentially, I don't think that's that much of a strong movement within New Zealand. Is that a fair assessment?
I would say that's a fair assessment at this time. I mean, it could well crop up one day, but I have to agree. I would say it is more likely to happen in Australia anytime soon than here.
And I suppose one of the interesting things, Luke, could be whether that might one day be a bargaining tool used by one of the smaller parties to, you know, help.
It could well be. I mean, it could well be. If there was ever sufficient sort of public support for it, we could see a small party form behind just with that goal. And if they got over the 5% threshold, or they gained an electoral seat, they could well gain power and be the sort of kingmaker after an election.
Oh, don't say that, please. Hillary Clinton will move to Australia and change her citizenship tomorrow.
I should suspect there may be many of our listeners in the US that would probably be quite grateful for that one, Justin.
I think we can create a special election for her in the outback. Plenty of land she can rule over, but no one lives there. She can't do any harm.
And that's a really good segue, Justin, into what's sort of your views of, say, the US presidential elections, and then what's the sort of general feeling in New Zealand? Are people in New Zealand actually interested in the primaries, or are they probably going to be more interesting.
There's not a huge interest in the primaries. They get a bit of media coverage on the 6 o'clock news, but I think the main interest will be when, after the Democrats have settled between Obama and Hillary and the real race starts. My own personal view of the US elections is that it's quite fascinating to watch, but I don't know. The primaries almost seem sort of to divide people. It's like divisive, and they do have advantages. They sort of turn up anything that's hidden in the closet, but they don't always want to have them here, though.
Yeah, because I suppose to you and I, Luke, that the sort of the whole primary process is sort of quite alien in the fact that, you know, we are presented with the candidates. We don't go and vote for which party will be putting the candidates forward. So that's always very interesting.
They're pre-selected. That's the term used in this part of the world. I assume it's the same in the UK.
Absolutely.
It is quite an alien process. And it's taken me about a year of full-on discussions on the boards to just have some kind of basic, not necessarily basic, but firm understanding of the process, and up to a point, that is.
And I've got to say, you know, having done this show with Justin, who is, I'm going to say, you know, he has a mine of information on this one, and I'm sure, you know, there are other people on the forums, as you quite rightly say, who probably have got an equal mine of information as Justin, but it's certainly been very interesting to sort of have someone who can guide you through that. And that certainly is one of the advantages of the ATS boards, is the fact that, you know, you can ask questions and people will always tell me about them. So putting you on the spot a little
certainly
bit,
is.
Who do you think is going to be the Democratic candidate?
I think Hillary could still snatch it at the convention. I don't think if she and Bill thought that they didn't have any chance of bringing the superdelegates on board, I don't think that thought it wouldn't be much point staying in the race, really.
And it's interesting because I've asked all our US interviewees this question, but I can now ask someone who's outside the US this question. Do you think America is ready to vote for a black man as president?
Well, I think, yes, I think they're ready to nominate in the primary process. Whether or not they'd actually vote for the Obama in the actual election, I'm not really sure, because there's probably still a lot of underlying sort of racism in the US that's just sort of either passed down the generations. You've still got your sort of old farts that will predate the sort of civil rights movement.
It's a fair assessment.
Now, I have one question in regards to this theme here. Here in the United States, every time we turn on the TV, we are still seeing some video clip of Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Did that make any kind of splash at all in New Zealand?
Oh, I think it rated maybe an item on a bit of a news story on the 6 o'clock news, but it didn't, proportionally, it got nowhere near the coverage it got in the US. I think it rated a mention here, but not overly. I mean, I might have even just, I think Obama's speech that he made afterwards probably got more of a mention than that, if anything.
Did you see anything on YouTube?
I watched,
or read anything otherwise?
A few days afterwards, I watched the speech on YouTube. I saw a YouTube video of it on somewhere.
And what was your impression?
Well, at the time, I was still sort of considering the issues at hand. I hadn't made my mind up. The speech itself, I thought the speech itself, putting the issues aside, was brilliant. I thought he absolutely nailed it. He did what he had to do, and I think he sort of, him and his advisors, he showed political smarts too. He also came out and he showed that he was in touch with people more than, say, the Republicans or even Hillary. I mean, that's just the impression I got from it. It went sort of beyond the issue of his past or own race. And
who do you think would be a better choice for New Zealand, a Democrat or a Republican? Or do you think it even matters?
Strictly speaking, out of national self-interest, and this is putting aside everything else, you'd have to go for a Republican because they're less likely to be protectionist in terms of trade. And because we're such a, you know, we're a population of 4 million people, access to markets is vital for our economy.
And I think, Justin, that's a very interesting point that Luke makes, because, you know, the New Zealand economy is you know, significantly based on exports, and potentially Luke's got a very good point there, Justin, that a democratic government may more lean towards protectionism and want to stop other countries from actually selling into the US.
Well, whether you like Republicans or Democrats, that flushing noise you hear in the background is our economy going down the tubes. So you guys may have to be sitting on your exports in the not-too-distant future because we might not be able to afford them.
Well, I didn't understand, but China, not a problem.
Ow!
And it's India, another growing market.
Yeah, India is going to be quite the emerging competitor to China. I couldn't help but notice that in recent weeks that Tata Motors, based out of India, has acquired the Land Rover and Jaguar brands.
Stick the knife in, Justin. Just stick it in a little further. Yes, absolutely right. But Tata have also taken over what was called Cora Steel as well. Or a division of Tata has taken over Cora Steel. So, and Cora Steel linked with a Dutch company, but in essence was a merger between a Dutch company and British Steel. So from that point of view, three fairly icon names in UK manufacturing have disappeared to Indian ownership. And I think that is interesting, and I suspect it's probably going to happen a lot more, and I suspect the US will be next in the firing line, as these countries have huge balance of trade surpluses and huge amounts of cash sitting in their coffers that they're just going to go out and start spending the money. And I think the US will suffer similarly.
There is one silver lining to this very dark cloud, and that is the fact that here in the United States, both Land Rover and Jaguar are very popular brands, so that I can say, and I can now be totally FCC compliant as I say this here, in the future, I'm looking forward to talking about bodacious Tatas.
Very good. Sorry, Luke, you were about to say something.
I don't think that it's all doom and gloom, the U.S. economy, what it's made out to be. Like, over here, we've had our exporters complain due to the high dollar, because it somehow makes their products more expensive to export overseas. So maybe politicians in the U.S. can use the low dollar in their favor and the country's favor and maybe turn things around a bit.
And how likely do you think that is, Justin, that are actually going to take advantage of the sort of weaker dollar?
I think they're doing a very good job of taking advantage of the weak dollar as it is. I don't see how current U.S. trade policy does anything that would be reformative, helpful, useful, or otherwise good for me as a citizen or consumer. I'm still sore at Bill Clinton for his having initiated and signed NAFTA in the first place. Right about now, I'm going to be guarding my remaining pile of pennies very carefully.
And waiting for the men in black to come and spirit you away, no doubt.
I'm safe here on the ATS compound.
Well, let me put it this way. I'd say the U.S. could gain access to overseas markets relatively easy because of its large domestic population and economic consumption. Is it not the responsibility of U.S. firms to produce products that people want to buy overseas? Like, if you go to a car dealer in New Zealand, and chances are it's all going to be Japanese-made cars that have been imported. They've had one or two owners in Japan, and they come over here. I mean, I wouldn't say a struggle, but you'd really have to look to find American-made cars here.
And hopefully, I'm going to turn around and say, hopefully you see Land Rovers and Jaguars cruising the streets of New Zealand. I was just sort of also interested in sort of going back a little bit to sort of Australia. And do the people of New Zealand perceive Australia as sort of the major superpower in the region? Is it seen that way, or do you sort of still feel that
sort
you've
of
got
seen,
a...
It's sort of a bit like sort of big brother little brother relationship, I think, more than anything else.
Siblings do fight,
constantly making fun of each other, and parodies on TV, and in the lead up to rugby test matches is usually all the hype and so on. I suppose if you look at it comparatively, they're almost a superpower in economic terms compared to us, because they just got to dig a hole in the ground and they make money, all the iron ore and gold, etc.
And how much, I suppose one of the things that you could say, look at New Zealand and say, potentially, it's got a a fairly rich coastline and potentially it's much closer to the Antarctic. Do you see that giving you any economic power or economic influence?
Well, there's obviously fishing, but that, you know, fishing and, you know, seafood is just another resource you've got to manage, because if you overfish, obviously you're going to have none left, and you underfish, you do over your own sort of economy and the private sector. So, but it's nothing sort of, I'm not putting down any of it on seafood industry because it is special, like bluff oysters, but it's nothing sort of special that would particularly sort of stand out in a purely economic sense. I think probably maybe from taste and variety it would, but although then again, if you were to go to a restaurant in Korea and Japan and look at the prices, I may rethink that position.
And I'm just sort of interested in sort of how important and significant the Commonwealth is.
Divided on that one myself. It seems to have some relevance and importance because other countries want to join it, and it is an avenue for diplomacy. It's had some importance to it. How much? I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm probably in favor of New Zealand becoming a republic if we could come up with a constitutional model that was good enough and that sort of protected everyone's rights. And
what shape do you believe that model would have to take, Luke?
I'm not really sure. It would be interesting because while the Queen is sort of doesn't have any role as a head of state, it sort of is sort of a something that could in theory be used to like a sort of check some. She could sack the government, although I don't think she would. I think you'd have to have a president who was elected by the people. I think you'd probably do, personally, I'd tweak the New Zealand political system in another area as well. I'd have the Attorney General as someone who wasn't sitting in Parliament. I do that anyway.
So what is your favorite thing about New Zealand?
Oh, I think it's the ice cream, because our dairy cows don't sit in barns during the winter, and, well, apart from the drought we have now, we get enough rain and subsistence that we produce the grass, which is good dairy products.
So, Martin, is New Zealand ice cream very popular in the UK?
I've got to say, no. I'm shockingly, I'd probably have to say, if you said name an ice cream brand, I'd say Bird's Eye and Ben and Jerry's, shockingly. I've got to say.
Oh, terrible.
And I don't disagree with you, Luke, and I'd welcome the opportunity for my store to shop to sort of stock it, but you know, then you sort of have to turn around and say, well, hang on a minute, ethically, should I be wanting my shop to bring ice cream halfway around the world for me when potentially, you know, you could turn around and say there's probably a very local farmer that can probably make ice cream. Whether it's going to be as good as New Zealand ice cream is a different matter. But, yeah, I mean, other than...
Just save it for the top-end restaurants and make more money that way anyway.
Probably right. I mean, from New Zealand, the two exports that I think most people would say, you know, would be New Zealand lamb and butter. Would probably say that those would be the two things.
Oh, I guess that noise means that it's time for us to wrap.
It probably is. Thank you very much, Luke. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, hopefully we'll certainly maybe try and get you on again. It's only been an interesting time to talk to somebody from the other side of the world, so to speak.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Expert 11.
Oh, yes, I do have a stock tip. Don't invest in finance companies. Put your money in the bank or bonus bonds.
I think with that, we probably ought to let our US colleagues off the hook on that one a little bit. Thank you very much, Luke.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I've got to say, that was it was great to have somebody from the other side of the world who's sort of talking to us about, you know, their views. I think that was extremely interesting to sort of talk to somebody who doesn't have a U.S. leaning, isn't U.S.-centric, Justin.
Hey, I was very impressed. And like I said, now I'm going to feel bad about the ice cream I have for dessert because I'm just going to know it'll pale by comparison.
Hey, you know. Nothing wrong with Ben and Jerry's, but it's probably not the best ice cream in the world. So one of the other things I noticed when I was looking through the forums was that your good president has sort of said from later on this year there's going to be no more troop withdrawals, which I think is particularly interesting. And I wonder whether this is some kind of subtle ploy or conspiracy to do something with the presidential elections.
Unfortunately, I believe it's just a few more nails in the Republican coffin. As you may know, General Petraeus and the senior U.S. diplomat to Iraq spent some time meeting with Congress earlier this week, and if I may indulge in a play on words, I believe that the general gave us a Crocker of Shiite. The ambassador to Iraq, Mr. Crocker, was so much the waffle that I kept looking for syrup to rain down from the ceiling.
Golly. But I suppose, and this is an interesting point, just looking from the outside, would not Bush be sort of thinking, before he sort of makes sweeping decisions, that he may actually have a word with McCain to ask him, or with maybe some of the Republican senior people in the party? Because ultimately, Bush, whatever Bush does now, could have a very even bigger impact on any chances that the Republicans have of being elected.
Well, I'm not sure that Darth Vader was in the room at the time, but this certainly will go down in history as a very questionable decision. Those who support the war are going to continue with the stay the course mantra. The people who are fed up with the war are going to point to this as another policy decision made by somebody who's unplugged from reality.
But ultimately, Bush has been a lame duck president for, you know, and typically, you know, in the last year of your second term, most U.S. presidents are seen as lame ducks. So you thought they'd be sort of trying to make life easy for their party and to maximize the chances of their party being reelected. And Bush seems to have, you know, lost the plot, almost gone off the reservation, so to speak.
His compass is certainly malfunctioning, that's for sure. I think from a purely political perspective, since that's what we do here, from a purely political perspective, this guy has been the Democrats' best weapon against the GOP overall. During his time in office, he's grown the size of the federal bureaucracy. He's enhanced federal power tremendously. And now these decisions that he's making about the war are rubbing so many people the wrong way that, you know, when you look back, it's not hard to see why so many states moved up their primary calendars. And it's not at all hard to understand why primary voter turnout has been on average between 4% and 14% by state, more so than it has been in the past. A lot of people are eager to be done with this administration.
And I suppose this is a good thing maybe for us to say to the listeners that if you want to throw some light on anything we've spoken about or what Expert 11 has had to say or on what President Bush has done with withdrawing troops, whether you see some kind of political conspiracy sitting in the background here and maybe is he being paid by the Democratic Party to make the Republicans so unelectable that it may be a landslide, just go to the show thread, start posting, and we will look at your comments and respond appropriately. And I suppose just on that one, I mean, you know, could we start a nice conspiracy rumor here that, you know, Bush is now in the power or is in the hands of the Democratic Party and they're telling him what to do?
Oh, I hate to say it, but the very smart posters on AboveTopSecret.com have already beaten us to it. I've seen material posted there that's at least 2 years old now. A lot of it is backed up with quite a few clickable links.
And I suppose that's just going to lead people back to the New World Order thing that this is all contrived, but we're probably stepping the mark a little bit on that one. So, but yes, if you have any comments, if you like what we've said, don't like what we've said, you agree or disagree with anything that Expert 11 has said, come to the show thread, post away. And on that subject, you asked a question last week, Justin.
Yes, I did. My 500-point trivia challenge question was as follows. What was Churchill's naughty document? And ATS member Tuning Spork got it right. Winston Churchill, that much-beloved Prime Minister of World War II, who got Britain through some very hard times, had in his back pocket a document which he showed to Joseph Stalin on more than one occasion. I would think it was a kind of political carrot. And there's some controversy here, but the bottom line is that Churchill told Stalin that it would be okay if he did certain things to certain countries, which ended up behind the Iron Curtain, because he felt that neither Britain nor the United States had any political interests there.
Ah, very interesting. Very interesting. I must guess I haven't sort of done a lot of digging into Winston Churchill, other than the sort of history that you're taught that he sort of, as you say, brokered the country through the Second World War and then was ceremoniously dumped at the general elections just before the end of the war, which is, you know, it's always interesting to show how, you know, people will, you know, take what you have to say and will live under extreme austerity, and then maybe the first opportunity they get to flex their muscles, they probably just sort of say thank you very much, pat you on the head and run you off. But he did, of course, come back and lead another conservative government in the 50s. So it's always interesting.
Well, of course. But I'll tell you what, if I had enemy bombers in my skies and if I was sleeping in the subway overnight, I'd be willing to listen to just about anybody, I think.
Oh, I think so. And I must confess, I will have to dig out some books on Winston Churchill, refresh my memory. Anyway, it's my turn to see if we can stump the listener. And hopefully the answer might come from someone other than Expert 11 and TuneIn Spork, although there's no problems with them answering the questions. And my question is, the London Declaration of 1949 was a milestone in the development of which modern-day organization? That's all I'm going to give you. I'm just trying to see if I give you less information, just how quickly the answer will pop up, because unfortunately these answers are popping up within hours of the show being posted, Justin.
Well, I'm pretty sure the answer is not Ben and Jerry's, because I don't think they were born until the late 50s.
I'm not entirely sure on that one. Anyway, I think it's time for us to wrap up.
We're going to leave you today with the words of some famous Americans in regards to the 40th anniversary of the Martin Luther King observance.
We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin.
Free peoples will never remain free if they are not willing, if need be, to fight for their vital interests.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have some very sad news. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee.
There's an old civil rights axiom that the weakest link in any civil rights case is always the defendant.
The message is very simple. Think for yourself and question authority.
With these words in mind, I'm Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time on the Above Politics show.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network, LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you too
can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.